Do you want to ride your bike, or do you want to learn how to train so you can really ride your bike?
It's all about building fitness. Get your legs spinning and get your heart pumping. It's not about training what you're good at. It's about training what you're not good at. They'll want to know what you've been doing for the last few months because you'll be kicking their ass. This is exactly how you get ahead. This is exactly how you get stronger. I'm giving you the tools you need to be a beast on two wheels. If you do the things I'm talking about, you'll be stronger, you'll be fitter, you'll be faster, and everyone around you will notice the difference. This is Tailwind Coaching, and you're listening to the Tailwind Coaching Podcast.
All right. Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Tailwind Coaching Podcast. I'm your host, Coach Rob, and I've got a great show for you here today. The one podcast on iTunes that's sitting here thinking about the Tour de France and waiting to actually review it for another week or so, just in case any positive dope tests come out. That's right, I'm about that cynical about it. But in any case, welcome again to the Tailwind Coaching Podcast here on the Daily Grind Cycling Journal and tailwind-coaching.com. I'll jump right into this. I want to thank a couple of my sponsors here. I want to thank Road ID. Road ID speaks for you when you're unable to. If they need to identify the carcass that's laying in the ditch on the side of the road, Road ID is a great way to do it. Head on over to their site, click the link on the website, upper right corner under sponsors, click the referral link there, head over to Road ID, pick up a Road ID. Now it can be customized with all kinds of badges and sayings. They even have an electronic one that you can update your medical information as new things become apparent in your medical history. Head on over there, purchase a Road ID, be smart, be safe, give your loved ones and your family a little bit of peace of mind that you're taking care of out on the road. Number two, I want to thank the Sufferfest, Dave McQuillan. He is a sick, sick bastard in designing those videos, I tell you what. Sounds odd that I would be promoting the Sufferfest here when I'm selling training plans on my very same website, but honestly, they merge so, so well with my training plans, especially during the winter months or those rainy days when you just don't feel like going outside. They're really great. They're awesome, awesome plans. They give you a great high-intensity workout, and they fit really well into my plan. So head on over to the Sufferfest, click on the link, the crying eyes down below, or just click the text link in the menu. Head on over there, and available for immediate download. Really, really great workouts. Dave McQuillan and his crew are really awesome. Licensed ASO and I think RAI footage for some of it as well. So really, really good stuff. Head on over, check it out. U.S. Wellness Meets, for those of you who are out there trying to build a little bit of muscle and not have the scrawny, spindly legs of Frank Schlick, or even worse, Michael Rasmussen, head on over, U.S. Wellness Meets, a huge online purveyor of hormone-free, all-natural grass-fed beef, chicken, etc., etc. They have some really, really awesome stuff, folks. And if you don't have a local CSA that does organic grass-fed meats, what the hell are you doing eating stuff from Safeway or ShopRite? That stuff's disgusting. Head on over to U.S. Wellness Meats. They ship it right to your door. It's really, really good stuff. And also, for all of your needs in terms of upgrading yourself, Bulletproof Exec, the upgraded self store. I'm actually drinking a cup of Bulletproof brand coffee right now. Actually, really good coffee. No, there's no butter or coconut oil in it, so don't even ask. Lots of cool supplementation over there. If you want to check out my biohacking articles, you can check those out on how to use those varieties of supplements in order to make yourself more of a machine on the bike. Of course, the number one way to make yourself a machine on the bike is to check out my training plans. Go over to the website, tailwind-coaching.com, and click on the coaching options menu item, and you'll have several options there for one-on-one coaching, downloadable training plans, and high-intensity trainer workouts. Obviously, that's the number one way to make yourself a monster on the bike, but another way to make yourself a monster is head over to those sponsors, click through on the website, And they'll throw a few shekels towards the Tailwind Coaching Podcast through hosting fees and bandwidth fees and things like that. Help me keep the podcast free. I love to give free information out because basically I just love watching people enjoy riding their bikes. And you know what? The better you are at it, the more you enjoy it. That's generally the case. So head on over there. Head on over to the website, tailwind-coaching.com, if you're looking for a way to contact me. You can find it in the upper right panel. You can find me at the Tailwind Coaching Facebook page. You can follow me on Twitter, CoachRobDC. You can also follow me via email. You can follow me on Strava. You can also contact me via email at CoachRobDC@gmail.com. I am done with consults, so if anybody has consult requests, I have those available. I have one coaching spot available for the fall for one-on-one coaching, and I can take on a couple more clients for the my new training plan support option. What this is a new training plan support, which is designed to accompany my modular training plans, but any of my training plans specifically. It gives you email access to me multiple times per week to ask questions, to get information, and get some ultra-secret tips and tricks that will help you become a stronger, more successful cyclist. Again, it's $30 a month at this point. It's cheap because, well, you're using training plans that I've already written. I don't have to go through each month and write a training plan for you, which is really the most time-consuming part of individual one-on-one coaching. So check that out if you're looking for coaching options, but you're not ready for full-on one-on-one coaching. Remember that you can take 10% off of any of my training plans in my downloadable training plan store and my high-intensity training workouts by using the discount code PODCAST10, PODCAST10, no spaces. Enter that code at checkout, knock out 10% off of your total. And don't forget to remember to go over and rate my podcast on iTunes. If you rate the Tailwind Coaching Podcast on iTunes, you help to push it further up the charts. You help me get even more free information out to people. You help me make people enjoy cycling more by making them better at it. And honestly, that's what I love about coaching, is making people happy, making them enjoy their cycling a little bit more. So each 5-star rating on iTunes helps out with that. So head on over to iTunes. There'll be a link on the website on tailwind-coaching.com under this this post for this particular podcast for that iTunes link. Modular training plans, don't forget early season racing is done. Early season racing is done. We are almost into August. You're going to be start transitioning into your build and peak cycles for your late season races, or you're going to be taking a little bit of time off and starting to build up towards cyclocross season. Everybody loves cyclocross. Absolutely. Oh, I hate racing it. I love it in theory, but I just hate racing it. I'm not a fan of the cold weather, folks. That's just how it is. So, but I damn well love watching people race it, and I love watching friends race it too. It's an awesome sport. So think about cyclocross. I've raced it in the past. I just can't do it anymore. Think about cyclocross season. Check out the modular plans for cyclocross. I got a killer one there. But we're going to jump into today's topic. Today's topic, of course, is the Grand Fondo and Century training. I had such wonderful response to my previous podcast on how to start road racing. And a lot of that, quote, wonderful feedback. I say that with such sarcasm that it's palpable almost. A lot of the wonderful feedback that I got was, what about me, man? I'm not looking to race. I don't want to race. I want to, quote, race Grand Fondos, or I just want to do centuries, or I've got this thing on my schedule. All right, fair enough. Well, I'm going to give you a few tips today on how to succeed at Grand Fondos, how to succeed at centuries. Give you a couple things that may be food for thought, things you may not have thought about in the past, or things that you really hadn't considered in preparing for a century or Grand Fondo. And I'm also going to explain the difference really between a Grand Fondo, between a century, and, you know, just general tips, tricks, and coaching advice for how to be the most successful that you can be at your late season Grand Fondo or century goals. And I'm going to jump into that right after I have another sip of this really delicious coffee. So I'll be right back after a real quick break. All right. So it makes sense to ask ourselves, what is the difference between a Gran Fondo and a Century? Aren't they basically the same kind of thing? Well, no, not necessarily. We'll start with the Gran Fondo here, and a perfect example of these kind of rides would be the Gran Fondo New York, which is held, obviously crosses the GW Bridge and heads into Fort Lee and north and all that kind of stuff. And the other option, or another one that's close to home here, would be Gran Fondo New Jersey, starting in Morristown, taking in 100 miles, well, I think it's 29, 65, or 100 miles of the best of northern and western New Jersey. Actually, it heads all the way out towards, I believe, Milford, either Milford or Frenchtown, I'm not sure which, into New Jersey off by the Delaware, and then coming back through areas like Chester and Mendham and things like that. A Gran Fondo, by definition, is basically nothing more than, quote, a big ride, end quote. And that's how these things started in Italy. These things basically started as a bunch of club rides in Italy, things that, you know, your club would basically do. Your wives would do a potluck dinner and try to get some food together for that. And it would raise a little bit of money for the club. It's become something that's a whole lot bigger than that. It's become something that's a whole lot more than that. These kind of things are generally put on by larger management companies. Coming up very, very shortly, I know there is the Gran Fondo Catskills, which I believe Eddie Merckx is actually taking part in. And that's run by Anthem Sports Group, the same ones that run the Tour of the Catskills, the same ones that run, I believe, Tour of the Dragons and Tour of Battenkill, things like that. So they're run generally by larger entities, not just a small club, a small group of people on the board of a club or something like that. And typically, these things have significant numbers of participants. I believe Gran Fondo New York had upwards of maybe 2,500 to 3,000 people, possibly. I know it was a large number. I know Gran Fondo New Jersey last year had about 2,800, if I remember correctly, registered. I don't know if everybody actually showed up to ride, but I know that there was about 2,800 or so people registered for that ride. So you're talking huge numbers of participants on a relative scale. And big difference here is a Gran Fondo, unlike a race. And I think this is what appeals to so many people about Gran Fondos compared to racing. You show up to a race, you're going to race and you're going to hurt. You're going to suffer. It's going to be a tough, tough ride. If you show up to a Gran Fondo, yes, there is a modicum of racing or an element of racing involved. But you can take most of it as much, you know, at its slowest speed or as fast a speed as you like. There are typically, for Gran Fondo New Jersey, for example, there's a series of timed segments, which are generally hill climbs, and you can be scored on those. Now, it's your choice to race those or not. If you want to suffer, you can suffer. If you don't feel like suffering, then don't bother. That's obviously different if you show up to a crit, knowing that, well, I'm going to race, and I'm going to race hard, and I'm going to suffer a little bit today. So time climbs or segments are very often a feature in the Gran Fondo kind of world. And the ability to either race them or not race them is sort of up to the rider themselves. It's not really determined by the organization, so to speak. excuse me, I guess I'm stuck in my throat here. Take one little sip of coffee so I can get that out of there. Again, Gran Fondos, just like a Century, they're going to have a significant number of rest stops or, quote, nutritional stations or whatever you want to call them. Very often, these include sponsor-provided things like Power Bar. I know sponsors a couple of these. Some of the local businesses are often tapped to supply some rest stops. I know, actually two of my favorite restaurants are rest stops for Gran Fondo, New Jersey, and not that I'm actually doing Gran Fondo, New Jersey, but I still support those restaurants in any way, shape, or form because they're just great places anyway. But typically well-stocked rest stops with a lot of sponsor-provided food and drink. Again, like I said, it's not necessarily a race. I think Grand Fondo New York actually times the overall length of the race as well as some of the segments. There are prizes often for the top finishers, the top climbers, etc. My wife actually won the Queen of the Mountains competition at Grand Fondo, New Jersey a few years back. And she actually got a whole swag bag with a golden medal, a golden jersey, I think there was a couple of special water bottles, things like that. It was essentially a prize pack, as well as a pretty cool party to go to, where you could pick up your gear in the presence of all the other queens and kings of the mountains kind of thing. So there are prizes often in these for top finishers, top climbers, et cetera, et cetera. on the opinion side of things, it's not really even an opinion. These are really, really great things for increasing cycling participation in the community. I know Grand Fondo, New Jersey donates a significant amount of the proceeds to charitable organizations such as Homeless Solutions of Morristown, the Morristown Seeing Eye, which actually trains seeing eye dogs for those who are visually challenged. Are we using visually challenged now? Can we still say blind? It's comparatively, if blind is a bad word, it's not comparatively bad after what Phil Liggett said today in the Tour de France regarding Changji. Yeah, let's not even go there. That was an interesting Twitter discussion, and you can find that if you really want. But I digress. Ridiculous sidebar. A lot of the Grand Fondos actually donate some of their proceeds to charities and other good causes. So it's not entirely self-serving. I know some of them, again, too, are very much self-serving. Grand Fondo New York, I'm not sure where the entry fees go. I know the entry fees for Grand Fondo New York are basically freaking ridiculous. I mean, you're talking like $200 to enter a race. Grand Fondo New Jersey's up there, too. It's like $135 or something like that. And very often there's a swag bag of stuff that many people just flat out don't want. I don't want a Grand Fondo New York jersey, but that's a completely different discussion. Grand Fondos, again, with that significant entry fee, are also have a lot more amenities. Like I said, typically you'll get things like a water bottle, a jersey. Grand Fondo New Jersey, one year, gave out beer glasses, pint glasses, which was kind of cool, actually. You also have a nice kind of numbering system. Some of the fondos I know give out cloth numbers, which is actually awesome. I love cloth numbers. They're a hell of a lot easier to pin, and they really don't flap as much as those laminated paper ones do. But you typically get printed numbers, as opposed to nothing at all. Now, contrasting all this to a Club Century. Club Century generally is a one-distance event. It's generally a 100-mile event. Sometimes, and I know some local clubs do this, and a couple of the clubs that I belong to in the past have done this, they'll offer a metric century, which is 100 kilometers or about 66 miles. That's typically offered for some of the less fit or less enthusiastic or less experienced riders. Like I said, these are very often club-hosted. They're run by one, two, or three people on a club, on a board of a club, something like that. They're not really designed to put any money into charity. They're really very often a club fundraiser. The idea is to get members and a few non-members to show up, pay a little bit of extra money to the club to take advantage of the rest stops and things like that, and just to participate in the actual century itself. Typically, the rest stops, there are less of them than, okay, having done a whole bunch of centuries, I can pretty well easily comment on this. And having done a few Grand Fondos, I can easily comment on this. The food at the rest stops for centuries is pretty crappy compared to a Grand Fondo rest stop. Now, this, of course, reminds me that if you're relying on the rest stops for your nutritional sustenance, you're already in trouble, but we'll get to that you know, in a little bit here. Fewer rest stops, less extravagant food. Typically, there's no sponsors for a club century to provide food. And generally, there's a whole lot fewer. There's a whole lot fewer people in a club century. I mean, you may have a club that has, say, 250 members. You might get 40 or 50 out for a club century. A couple of years that I did the Mid-Hudson Century, Mid-Hudson Bike Club Century, I think we maybe had maybe 55 people at most doing that. And that's a pretty good sized club if I remember correctly. But you generally get a few outside people that'll pay to, you know, do the century as well. Typically friends of the club members themselves, where they convince them, hey, this looks like a good idea. Why don't you come and do this? And, you know, and that's how you get a couple of outside sources into a club century. And of course, typically there are no prizes. I wouldn't say very infrequently, but occasionally you have a barbecue or a lunch afterwards. Some clubs that shall remain nameless will actually make you pay for your own lunch at a certain trattoria here in New Jersey. Yeah. And you also have to pay for the century, too. So, and there's no rest stops on the century. Yeah, you got to pay for your own rest stop food. So that's an interesting one. There's a whole gamut of different ways you can run a century. Some of them are run very well. Some of them are run just extremely poorly. I can say that from experience. So those really are your two, your big, big differences in between a Grand Fondo and between a century. Things that they typically have in common is they're typically what you would consider an epic ride. Okay, 100 miles is not an insignificant ride, and you're talking anywhere between 5 to 8 hours. So that would be generally classed as an epic ride. They can have any variety of huge amounts of climbing, no climbing, and extravagant flat terrain. They could have, you know, really, really awesome views or points of interest, or they could be relatively boring, just natural nature, for example. So there's all kinds and all sorts of things, but the bottom line here is that each one of these entities, whether it's a Grand Fondo, whether it's a Club Century, is generally ticked off as a pretty significant goal for most cyclists. 100 miles is sort of, for some reason, seen as the rite of passage in terms of cycling and in terms of riding. Of, you know, once you've done a century, you're a real cyclist. I kind of take issue with that and say once you've broken a collarbone or once you've crashed, you're a real cyclist. But we're not going to go there. We're not going to even touch that discussion. In fact, knocking on wood that I have not yet broken a collarbone would be a good thing to do. So being that these two entities, whether or not they are similar, different, whatever the case may be, being that these two entities are generally pretty significant goals for a lot of cyclists, I think it's prudent to talk about how we excel at these kind of rides. And I'll talk about that in just a second here. All right, so you've got a century or a Fondo on your calendar. That's something that you're finding as a huge goal for you. Just this stupid screen. There we go. My podcast studio is falling apart. So you've got a century or a Fondo on your plan. That's your big goal for the season. How do you excel at 100 miles of varying terrain? Well, number one thing you have to do is you have to find out what that route's going to be, and you have to take a look at that route well in advance so that you can tailor your training a little bit in order to be ultimately 100% successful at that ride. What you need to be able to do is you need to be able to take a look at things like significant climbs, repeated climbs, things like that, and you need to find out what you need to do to be successful in that kind of environment. For example, if you're going to do Grand Fondo Catskills, you're going to need to know that that Grand Fondo is going to take in Platte Clove Road. And let me tell you, folks, if you're not ready for Platte Clove Road, Platte Clove Road or the Devil's Kitchen is going to kick your ass. I guarantee it. I have experienced that climbing. I've experienced climbing the Devil's Kitchen with a 3927, grinding up there at about 50 RPM, standing most of the 1.2 miles. And let me tell you, it's one of the worst experiences of your life. So we'll get to special considerations for things like that. Yeah. A little bit here, probably in that next section there. But if you're going to excel, whether it's a Fondo or a Century, number one, find out what the route is. All right, find out what the route is. Pre-ride parts of the route, especially ones that look difficult to you, so you have an idea of what you're coming up against. And that'll give you a basis of what you can work on fitness-wise in order to improve so that not only do you have less suffering during the ride, you can actually enjoy it and possibly, you know, hit your goal time. So let's say number one, what these rides require. These rides require saddle time, folks. And this is one of the very few times that I am going to say that just plain old saddle time without direction is not the worst thing in the world. And I'll tell you why. If you are not used to sitting on the saddle for depending on the terrain, between 5 and 8 hours, life is going to be absolute misery for you, and also really for your grundle, to be honest with you. Your grundle, your perineum, your taint, whatever you want to call it, is going to be in shock and misery and awe. Shock and awe in your perineum is almost an awesome tagline. Sounds like a Shock and Awe Perineum. Sounds like a band name, so to speak. But the ability to stay on that saddle for 5 to 8 hours is crucial. So you need to be able to work up to that kind of 5 to 8 hour time frame on the bike. And like I said, I've seen it happen. People are like, hey, I've done 6 hours. Not a problem. I should do this thing in like 7.5. Good luck, buddy. Good luck, buddy. 5 hours may be pushing it. So if your longest ride you've ever done is like 4 hours and you try to do a 6 hour century, you're increasing the amount of time on the saddle by 50%. Good luck to you. You are going to be walking like a bow-legged cowboy for days afterwards. Take my word for this. Make sure you have equivalent saddle time to what you are expecting to spend on the century. So if you've got a century coming up and you're expecting to do, let's make the math really simple. Let's make it 20 miles an hour, which is a pretty fast century. Probably a pretty flat century, too, unless you're a absolute beast of a club rider or you're a Cat 1 or 2 and you're just taking in a club century for the fun of it. Let's say 20 miles an hour for a century. And you are, you're expecting 20 miles an hour. That'd be about 5 hours. You cannot get away with doing anything less than probably 4.5 hours on the bike to understand and to break your body into that specific time in the saddle. All right. And now easily following up on the saddle time, something that I've harped on over and over and over again, those of you who are doing or have done or performed my training plans will understand that this is a huge part of my training plans, and that is muscular endurance. Time under tension. The ability for your body to not break down when you're putting pressure into those pedals. All right, because I'll be honest with you, if you have a 5 hour century that you're doing at 20 miles an hour and you're doing it's probably pretty flat, you're going to be on the gear a lot. Okay, you're going to be spending a lot of time on the pedals under tension. Your body needs to be able to not break down in hour 3.5. All right, so muscular endurance is absolutely, absolutely imperative to be able to succeed either at a century or a Grand Fondo. All right, Grand Fondos are typically a hell of a lot hillier than a century. So you're going to need that muscular endurance. In fact, you're going to need extra muscular endurance to be able to handle the climbs on those routes without cramping, without breaking down, without failing. All right, those are things that you absolutely must have. You must have saddle time. You must have muscular endurance. And the third thing that you absolutely 100% must have before taking on a Century or a Grand Fondo is core stamina. All right. You've seen it in Bicycling Magazine. You've seen it in Peloton Magazine. You've seen it from all over the place. Various coaches are harping on it. Core strength and stamina. Most of the power that you produce as a cyclist does not necessarily come through your quads, your hamstrings, etc., etc. In fact, yes, some of it does, but the foundation of any limb, leg, arm, head, whatever, is a solid functioning core and glute system. All right, you want to talk about muscles that comprise a core? Let's talk about transverse abdominis. Let's talk about rectus abdominis. Let's talk about QLs. Okay. Let's talk about pelvic floor. Let's talk about glutes, all right? The big boys, the things that you really, really need in order to really be successful, okay? These are 100% things that you have to be able to use. You have to, all right? And they cannot break down before you're done with that Century. I've got to say, I've seen it happen time and time again. I have seen riders who go out there, really, really strong riders, but they just don't pay any heed to saddle time, muscular endurance, or core stamina. Core stamina is really the one that most of them are lacking. They'll get about halfway or three quarters of the way through, and suddenly they will just shatter. Their bodies will just give up the ghost. And they'll start, quote, pedaling squares. If you could see me on video, I'm doing the air quotes thing right now. And that's pretty much the sign that you're done. You've overrun your muscular endurance. You've overrun your core stability and your core stamina and your core function. And you're finished. Your hopes of achieving that that goal of 5 hours are just went out the window. Because chances are, unless you've been absolutely killing it for the first 4 hours, you're not going to make it. You're absolutely not going to make it, all right? So those are the three main big things that you have to have in order to be successful from a very basic standpoint. Other things that will help you to be successful, things like speed skills, being able to range your leg speed in order to rest different physiological systems. All right, slowing down your leg speed, a lot doing muscular endurance work, lower cadences, higher pedal tensions, obviously takes a lot of the strain off of your cardiovascular system. It puts it onto your muscular system, all right? Now, being able to spin that gear a lot faster, a lower gear a lot faster, say 110, 120 RPM at a really light tension, takes a lot of stress off your muscular system, takes a lot of stress off those big muscles, and puts a lot of stress onto the slower twitch, oxidative type muscle fibers. So your physiological aerobic system takes a lot of abuse when you have a really fast pedal stroke with a really light tension. So being able to range your leg speed in order to rest or use various energy systems is one of the key components into doing well at a Fondo, not just surviving, but doing well. And along with speed skills are in essence a neuromuscular skill and neuromuscular endurance, the ability to continually spin a really high cadence without breaking down is another important thing for extreme success when doing Fondos or Centuries. Now, you're probably sitting there wondering, saying, well, you know, muscular endurance sounds a lot like neuromuscular endurance. Well, the two are tied together. In fact, the two are relatively intimately tied together in that muscular endurance still takes into account the ability of motor units in your muscles to actually fire concurrently and properly in order to produce a significant amount of tension and to not tire out as they fire. But muscular endurance is more of a biochemical physiological adaptation, whereas neuromuscular endurance is more of a neurophysiological adaptation, improved muscle memory, improved signaling between brain, nerve, and muscular system. So just like your muscle fibers can tire out, they can run out of energy, your nerves can actually tire out as well. If you're not used to spinning 110 RPM for 5 hours on a flat century, you're going to have a tough time doing that. All right, your body will start to break down. The body will only do what it is actually able to do, what it has been taught to do. And you need to work on that neuromuscular aspect of things as well. And that means speed drills, skill drills, things like that. All right. Now, for fondos especially, which typically have, shall we say, races within a race or timed climbs or timed segments, the ability to hit zone five and repeat that zone five effort is huge. All right. That also amounts to the ability to bridge gaps between groups. If you're going for a specific time, you're going to want to be able to hit various groups. And if you're running faster than them, you need to bridge up to them, regain some composure, and then bridge up to the next group. Zone 5 repeats are ultimately required to crest short little rollers and hills. They're also required for some of the timed climbs and segments, which are typically anywhere in the neighborhood of 4 to 10, 12 minutes, something of that nature. So you need to be able to repeat those efforts over and over and over again. Again, if your body is not used to doing these, then good luck to you. That's about all that can be said. Most of my plans include some variation of Zone 5 repeatability. It's honestly an absolutely necessary skill, not only from a fondo or century standpoint, but from a group ride standpoint and from a well-developed cyclist standpoint. So that's something that's relatively important. In either case, a century or a grand fondo, being able to ride below your threshold is a critical importance if you want to succeed. So any intervals or any work on raising your functional threshold power will be significantly important to you. These FTP increasing intervals will allow you to put in more power, more speed under threshold, and you will burn up less glycogen by having to excessively work over your threshold. All right. So again, FTP type intervals are very important for most cycling disciplines. Grand fondos and century riders, you are not special in any regard there. It's really important for you guys as well. A couple of things that are very typically overlooked, both for grand fondos and for centuries, more for grand fondos really, group skills, the ability to hide from wind, the ability to ride in a group, the ability to be comfortable in a group, especially in the mass start format like Grand Fondo New York, New Jersey, the ability to ride elbow to elbow to people without being terrified that they're going to come into you and take you out. Group ride skills, especially in a fondo, if you're looking to make certain amounts of time or you're looking for specific goals or you're looking for goals on the time climbs, those group ride skills will be invaluable in order to help you save energy, help you pace on climbs and things like that. So there are plenty of, I've done a couple of podcasts, I've done a couple of posts on group riding skills. I suggest you check those out. The ability to draft properly, the ability to pull through a group, the ability to rotate through a group, things like that. Those are really, really important. And I'm going to put an asterisk on the, group skills in a mass start format, because if you take down a bunch of people, especially at the start of a grand fondo, you're going to be probably the least popular guy in the entire fondo. And believe me, that's not some designation you really want. All right. Nutritional management, something that's very often overlooked. A lot of people will say, oh, cool, there's rest stops. I'm just going to eat, you know, what's at the rest stops? No, you're not. In many cases, what is at a rest stop is food that you have not really ever tried riding with. All right. Do an experiment. Next time you go out for a training day, take a piece of food with you, all right, and eat it halfway through your ride, all right, wolf it down real quick, but make sure it's something that you've never, ever eaten on a ride. So if you've never eaten a PB&J sandwich, take a PB&J with you and plow through half of a PB&J halfway through your next training ride. I don't care if it's 20 miles. Plow through half of that PB&J sandwich. Tell me how you feel on the way back. All right. Maybe a ham and cheese. Try that. All right. The bottom line here is if you're relying on the rest stops for your nutritional needs, chances are you're screwed. All right. You should be taking enough nutrition with you in the form of gels, food, flasks, whatever the case may be, so that you can basically fill your water bottles with water and have enough nutrition to get you through the ride without relying on what's sitting at the rest stops, okay? The other thing you need to consider is you need to take nutritional items with you that you are wholly familiar with. If you're not familiar, for example, with Clif Shot Blocks, you have no business taking them with you on a Grand Fondo or on a Century, because it's a recipe for disaster trying to eat something that your body is not accustomed to. Many, many times I've told people, do not, under any circumstances, ever try something new nutritionally on race day. The same applies to you Grand Fondo or Century riders. Don't try something new. Have your normal breakfast that you always have before a ride or a race. Take your normal food with you before you have a ride that you normally do before you ride or race. If your training rides are only 60 miles and you're suddenly doing a 100-mile century, which is probably not a good idea anyway, but I digress, just take more of the food that you normally take. All right? If you take a can of Coke normally in your back pocket, take two cans of Coke in your back pocket. Don't be afraid in this one particular case to take a saddlebag if you need a saddlebag. Granted, I hate saddlebags with the fire of 1,000 suns. However, I'm not above using one if I still can't stuff everything in my pockets. So, the bottom line here is do not try anything different. Save that rest stop food. If you have to eat anything, wait until you have the barbecue at the end, before you're not riding where it's not going to hamper your ability to complete the Fondo, the Century, whatever, as you're hoping to complete it. Something a lot of other riders tend to forget, preparing for weather. I can't tell you how many people have told me, you know, I did a century once. I got caught in the rain and it sucked. Did you have a rain jacket? No, I didn't have a rain jacket. I didn't even think about it. Please, for the love of God, just take a look at the weather. All right. Almost all of you have a smartphone, I'm fairly certain, I know all of you have an internet connection of some kind. Otherwise, how would you be listening to this podcast? Go to AccuWeather.com, I prefer Intellicast.com, and look at the weather. All right, and don't just look at the weather for the area around which you are actually riding or where the ride starts. So if Grand Fondo, New Jersey starts in Morristown, I'm not just looking at the weather for Morristown. I'm looking at the weather for Califon. I'm looking at the weather for Frenchtown. I'm looking at the weather for Milford. I'm checking and I'm seeing, is there a chance of rain? Is there a chance of X, Y, or Z? And I'm going to pack appropriately. That means if you're a little bit chilly at the start, it's going to be a hot day and you're starting, say, 6 a.m. If you're a little chilly at the start because you're not wearing arm warmers, leg warmers, and a jacket, that's probably a good thing. All right. If it's a little drizzly at the start and they're calling for rain later in the day and you do not have a rain jacket tucked into your back pocket or stuffed under your jersey or something of that nature, well, either you're a complete hard ass following rule number 9, or you're just a dummy. I'm not sure which. So check along the route, check the weather along the route, check the weather from start to finish and every place in between, and pack appropriately. All right. You don't want to get stuck being overdressed in hot weather. You don't want to be stuck underdressed in cold weather. You want to have eventualities for rain if it's in the forecast, things like that. All right. So that pretty much, all those concepts pretty much covers the basics of how to excel at Fondos and how to excel at Centuries. I've got a couple more quick tips for people, though. Things that most people really don't think about. And I'm going to give you those little quick tips right after this before I wrap this guy up. All right. Some of you may consider these to be common sense tips, but we know that common sense nowadays is not necessarily that common. So, a few special considerations for Centuries and Fondos. Number one, and the one thing that I see so many people screw up with and so many people ignore, is Well, it's very obvious to me, and again, only because I have a huge workshop full of equipment, and that is gearing. Pick the proper gearing for the proper ride. All right. If you're doing the Twin Lights Century here in New Jersey, let me tell you something. That ride is 100 miles, and it has probably about 400 feet of vertical gain on it. All right. If you're riding a compact crankset with an 1132 cassette on it, do you think that's appropriate gearing for the terrain? I'm going to go ahead and wager probably not. Even if you're only changing, now I know in a lot of cases it's difficult to just swap out a crankset. Cranksets are not cheap, especially these days. So it's difficult to swap out a crankset or chainset or, you know, chain rings or whatever, what have you. At least pick the proper cassette, the proper rear cogs for the ride that you're doing. So, for example, if I'm doing the Twin Lights Century in New Jersey, while I may normally ride a 5339 and a 1225 or 1227 for hilly terrain, you'd be pretty sure I'm riding a 5339 and an 1121 or at most an 1123. Maybe the 1123 considering the wind on that century, but that's neither here nor there. Pick something to cover your bases. If you're doing Grand Fondo Catskills, don't be an idiot like I was and don't try to ride Platte Clove at the end of a 100 miles in a 3927. You'd be smarter going with a compact chain set in the front and an 1128 or maybe even a 1230 or an 1130 in the back. Just so that you can actually get up that monster after 100 miles when you're pretty much cooked from the heat, the humidity, and, of course, the previous, 95 miles. So, in terms of picking gearing, I generally would err on the side of undergeared as opposed to overgeared. It sucks to get into a ride and realize that, well, shit, maybe that 1123 was a bad choice for this. Or maybe that 1228 or 1128 was way too wide of a cassette range for this. well, that's not necessarily the worst thing, however. Better to be undergeared. So if in doubt, if you're wondering about your stamina, particularly if you don't have a lot of saddle time or your muscular endurance is a little suspect, you may want to consider going with a much lower gearing option, a larger cassette, maybe an 1130 or 1230 or something like that. Cassettes are relatively cheap. All right, cog sets are relatively cheap. You can generally find them. If you have to find them on eBay, you can find them for, 40, 50 bucks, something like that. Crank sets or chain sets, you're going to be looking at a significantly higher investment just to be able to change that out. And the other problem with changing out a chain set is, or crank set, is you need to change and adapt or modify the front derailleur position in order to properly shift a compact crank compared to a standard. So, and vice versa. So keep that in mind as well. Also keep in mind that if you are not really, really handy or have a significant workspace, you have to have a shop do this. A cog set change is really, really simple. Some wheels you can actually even just pull the cassette body off. You can buy a separate cassette body or a free hub body. And you can actually just bolt the cassette on and just slide the whole free hub body on. I've seen that done a few times too for people who are really not terribly technically inclined. But I don't recommend that. Just get yourself a chain whip. They're cheap. Get yourself a cassette lockering tool. They're cheap. And a wrench. And you can pretty much swap out a cassette in the matter of 10 minutes max. All right, so make sure you're properly geared and use other appropriate equipment for the conditions. If you're doing a 100-mile century, unless you're a real badass or a hardcore guy, it's probably not the smartest idea to bring your ultra stiff racing bike with you. I mean, unless you're loving the every bump, probably best to leave that at home. Bring your endurance bike with you. If you're not bringing multiple bikes, be smart about your wheel selection. If I'm doing the Twin Lights Century, you better believe I'm going to be looking for a set of 80 millimeter deep rims to you know, 80 millimeter deep wheels to crush the aero-ness of that that course. If I'm doing Grand Fondo Catskills, not so much. I might want to put climbing wheels on there. It doesn't make sense to be lugging 2,000 grams of aero wheels up the Devil's Kitchen when you could easily only be lugging 2.5 pounds or 1,000 grams of wheels up the Devil's Kitchen. So really look at the ride, look at the terrain. This goes back to knowing your Century, knowing your Grand Fondo, and picking your equipment appropriately. This is, of course, null and void if you only have one set of wheels, so keep that in mind, too. Always, always, always make sure that you carry spare tubes, you carry tools, things like that with you. At least a multi-tool, a spare tube, and a way to inflate that spare tube. Also, always bring a few dollars in cash with you, and it's not a bad idea to throw a credit card in as well, just in case. Don't rely on the sag wagon to provide you mechanical support. They're there in emergencies, okay? They can't be picking up everybody's flat tire and every et cetera, throughout the entire day. So please don't ask them to do that, all right? It's always prudent to carry your own supplies and your own equipment and be self-sufficient. So I would recommend that you also do that. Along the same lines as don't try no new nutritional things on the day of your ride, don't try new gear on the day of your ride, if you're fond of your Century, i.e. do not wear a brand new pair of shorts that you've never worn before. I remember doing a Century with somebody at one point who had just gotten their brand new club kit. I think it was Verge, actually, if I remember correctly. And, yeah, brand new club kit, had never been worn, had never even been washed, and said person decided to go out and do 100 miles in this kit. Well, let me tell you what saddle sores are about, folks. That's a key way to do it. All right, just like you need saddle time in your equipment. Do not, and I repeat, do not try to add new equipment, the day of your Century. The Century or Grand Fondo is not the time to find out that, wow, this helmet really pushes into that spot on the top of my head and is giving me a headache. Sucks to be you. You better deal with it for the next 80 miles. All right? So just don't do it. All right? As cool as it is to show something off for the first time in front of a lot of people, resist the urge. Just do not do it. Again, don't try any new nutritional protocols on the day of your Century or Fondo. Stick with what is tried and true. And the last one, which should seem really, really obvious to me, but I've seen it happen more oftentimes than not. I've seen it even happen on group rides, on Sunday rides, and things like that. Make sure your bike is in proper working order before the day of the ride. All right? Don't try to stop at a bike shop at 6:30 in the morning or 7 in the morning when the Fondo starts at 7:30 going, you need new brake pads. Or I need a spoke replaced on this wheel, or I need my wheels trued, or, you know, the shifting on this thing is really off. Right. I'm kind of channeling the video shit cyclists say a little bit. Don't be that guy. All right. And if you're not familiar with that video, Google it. It's a pretty popular video, pretty common video out there. Don't be that guy. Don't be the guy who shows up to a Fondo with a squeaky chain. Don't be the guy that shows up to a Club Century begging for a set of tools so that you can adjust your derailleurs. All right? Make sure all of that is done, dusted, and ready to rock and roll before you walk out the door to get to your Fondo or Century. All right? So, that's a lot of info packed into almost an hour here. With that, I'm going to sign off. I want to thank all of you for listening here. I want to encourage all of you to go over to iTunes. Again, there's a link in the video podcast post on the website, tailwind-coaching.com. I want to thank all of you for listening. Encourage you to go over to iTunes, rate the Tailwind Coaching podcast. 5 stars helps me move up in the ratings. It helps me get more information out there to more and more people. And more people that I can get information out there too, the more and more people will learn how to excel at riding their bikes. And there's nothing I enjoy more than seeing people enjoying riding their bike. And one of the quickest ways to enjoy riding your bike, and this was something my team manager has explained to me many, many times, when you succeed, whether it's your own personal goals or team goals or whether you win a race or whatever it is, when you're succeeding, everything is more fun. And that goes without saying. So the more ratings I get, the higher I can push this puppy up the charts, and the more people will actually start succeeding, and the more people will be having fun. And I love when people have fun. So take this information, crush your late season fondos and centuries. Keep the rubber side up. Keep the rubber side down. Don't keep the rubber side up. Jeez, that's a bad. That's a really bad thing. Keep the rubber side down. Keep the shiny side up. Be strong. Be well. Ride smart. Enjoy yourself out there. And I will be talking to you folks really, really soon.